The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast, sometimes known as the ATL Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis, and today's show is with Sarah McApee. Now, you're going to hear from her shortly. I want to do a little setup here because this is a different kind of show. This is the most political show we've ever done, but it's just deeper than that. It's, to me, an eye-opening scenario. Like most of you, I see a lot of stuff that comes across my news feeds, and I see the stuff that I believe in. I see the stuff that I don't believe in. I know, even though I'm mostly fed the stuff that I quote-unquote believe in or I like, I'm fed a lot of both of it because I look at some of it. When you look at some of it, you get the algorithm for all of it. And I happen to be up one night watching YouTube videos and have no idea how I wound up here, but I found out about Colton's story. I can't say it shocked me because kind of nothing shocks me, but the short version, we do get into a little bit on in the interview, but to give you a little backstory, he was at January 6th. He was at the Capitol on January 6th, and all the videos from the news that showed this former police officer, and they showed what looked like just kind of a rush of violence. But there was later audio found, and it is very, very clear that this man is attempting to save multiple people's lives and keeping people off someone that was down. And in the heat of the moment, I get it, man. They locked everybody up that was nearby or that it happened during. But in the weeks that followed, he was arrested. And I'm not sure if the audio was found before he was arrested. But once he was arrested, the audio clearly exists. And the audio is very clear what he's doing. We can include the clip in the notes about how he was screaming and pleading to get some help, to get people off someone that was hurting. And I saw this video and I saw Sarah and I thought, well, rather than be the guy that just says, well, they're right-wing folks that disagree with me, they probably deserve it anyway, I thought, why don't I have a real conversation? Because that's what everyone's saying these days. No one talks. We just comment and yell. So I wanted to have a real conversation. So I actually want to start with, because part of the problem is not just what happened in terms of the facts aren't all there in terms of what he was arrested for, but how he's been treated since. And whether I agree with storming the Capitol or not, when you are arrested, you should be treated like a human being. You should be able to see your family. You should be able to get due process. That's how this stuff works. That is what separates us from other countries. And that does not appear to be happening. So what I'm going to start with is Sarah's testimony in June of this year. Just about a minute of that just kind of shows what's happened since he was arrested. And then I'll go right into the interview. And I learned a lot. So let's dig in. Away we go.
Thank you for making this possible. In light of recent discoveries surrounding the January 6, 2021 incident in Washington, D.C., I am compelled to bring attention to the violation and denial of basic rights experienced by individuals involved in this event, including my husband, Ronald Colton McAbee, who served as a law enforcement officer for 7 years. On August 17, 2021, our home was raided by the FBI, resulting in seizure of several items, including our front porch flag. Since then, Colton has been moved 7 times, facing the unsettling reality of being in 6 different facilities. There have been instances when even his own family was unaware of his whereabouts for up to 5 days. He has endured prolonged periods of 24-hour solitary confinement lasting up to 7 days without access to basic necessities such as a shower. Unfortunately, these circumstances are not unique to Colton, but are a rather common experience shared by the January 6th defendants. As a result, their fundamental American, human, and God-given rights have been denied. Over a span of 2 years, these defendants have endured unjust treatment, including extended periods of time of solitary confinement, denial of haircuts, religious services, and visitation rights, both in person and video. It took 597 days before I was granted a mere 30-minute visit with Colton, conducted behind glass. These examples exemplify the systematic denial of their basic right, which stands in stark contrast to the principles we hold dear as Americans.
This, I do not, like, I'm not a person who has a political show. I don't talk about my political beliefs a lot. I talk usually, but just to, for this show, people in Atlanta, around Atlanta, whoever it is, actors,
sure,
you know, business owners, whatever. Just, and so this, so I saw video of the show you were on, and I forget the guy's name, but you were, it showed, it was basically showing me, and we're going to do a whole intro at the beginning to tell people the whole backstory. We're not going to redo the whole backstory. But I watched this, the audio of what happened with your husband, and I am someone that leans to the left, and everybody's always talking about, we're not communicating, we're just yelling at each other, and there's no dialogue, and I thought, I'm not someone that would have gone to the Capitol on that day. You and I probably disagree about a lot of things. When I heard the audio of what happened and saw and thought, well, wow, it's pretty obvious what this guy is doing. Why is this not changed? And let's have a conversation about it. So I think it also shows just, I don't want to say you can't always believe what you see, but that there might always be another side. And that's the other part that I think both sides, everybody doesn't really, aren't clued into, because when I first see the video, and even then articles, and they show your husband, and he's got the knuckles on, it's like, well, clearly this guy is up to no good. That is what I thought. Well, this guy's looking for trouble, right? And then what happens is he's trying to save somebody's life. And in, like, you know, there's this insanity happening, and here this guy is trying to help people. So what, I guess, can we just start with what your lawyers are telling you about why a judge wouldn't allow it, or how a judge can't allow the audio part, which shows a completely different side to what's happening. Can we kind of start there?
Yeah, for sure. So unfortunately, it goes against their narrative. So what's been portrayed to the general public for the last 2.5 years has been that this was an insurrection and that there were very bad people on the ground that day causing trouble, right? And so when you, just like you said, I've had so many people say to me, if you just watch the video, you have no idea what's going on. There's chaos all around you. You have people over here beating each other. You have whatever's going on here, people yelling at each other and pepper spraying. And you're like, what the? It's madness when you watch it. As soon as you turn on the audio, you can hear dialogue going on. I'm helping. I'm one of you. You have a man down. Because this whole time, right, this whole 10, I think it's 10 minutes of this is complete chaos of what's going on. But right before that, I always say, I'm like you. I believe everybody should be able to have a conversation, regardless of your beliefs. I want to know why you think the way you think, because you might give me some insight that I didn't know. I'm not so far stuck in my beliefs that I'm not willing to listen to the other side, because to me, that's what makes America great. I don't want everybody to think like me. That would be pretty boring, in my opinion. I want to be able to have intellectual conversations with people to say, hey, why do you think that way? So just like you, you read the articles, you listen to it without the audio, and you're like, man, this is a bad, bad dude here, right? And then you, one small thing, you turn on the audio, and you can clearly hear what he is saying to the officers. So 10 minutes before that, you're like, well, why wasn't he doing anything 10 minutes before that? He wasn't going to get involved in that. I mean, there was chaos breaking around. The only reason that he got involved is because he saw an officer on the ground. Now, granted, he didn't agree with what the officers were doing that day. Clearly, he was telling Lila Morris to stop beating this woman that was laying on the ground. But regardless of that, he was an officer himself, and you just see an officer in need, right? So he literally looks around the corner to the tunnel and says, you have a man down, and the line of officers don't do anything to help. So he jumps into action because that's what you're trained to do as an officer, right? I can't say for sure that Lila Morris killed Roseanne Boylan, but I can promise you that she did not help the situation by beating her as she was laying on the ground unconscious. What you're trained to do as a law enforcement officer is to jump into action. And that's exactly what Colt did that day, regardless if he was on duty or off duty. And I've said this before to people, it didn't have to be at the Capitol that day. It could have happened in the McDonald's parking lot, could have happened at the Tennessee State Capitol. He would have done the same thing because he saw two people in distress. He was trying to pick up this officer and get him back to the line of duty. That acknowledges, as you heard, acknowledges that he was helping him, says, I know, help me up. And then he tries to go and help Roseanne Boylan and save her life. And then at the end of it, right before he gets taken away for medical because his shoulder's broken, the officer thanks him twice for his help that day and puts his arm around him and says, I got you. So why the audio won't be allowed into the court system, I truly believe it is because it goes against the narrative. We are going to take this all the way to trial in front of a jury. And I pray that the judge will allow this in, because how can you not allow in the audio? That's exculpatory evidence. If you are going to charge him with those videos, those same videos, and all the government said is, oh, there's a technical error, we can't play the audio. That's literally what they said in court. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? You're the United States government and you have a technical error, so you can't play the audio. It doesn't make sense to me.
And let me interrupt really quickly, I think this is the part some people have a hard time swallowing, including me sometimes.
Yeah.
So when we say they, right, like the government, like who is that, right? It's people, right? So are you saying, trying to say this without judgment, are you saying, like, I understand politicians have fucking agendas 1,000% and they try to push them on judges or what have you. Are you saying this one particular judge has it in his heart to be a motherfucker, or people are saying to him, you better not allow the audio and there's a big bad conspiracy? Like, what are you saying?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I have heard every way from which way to the other. I have seen how this judge has acted. If you go back and look at his history and you look at what he did to General Flynn by when the government said, hey, listen, we're not going to continue this case anymore. We're going to drop the charges. This judge said, no, you're not doing that. We are taking
who's
it.
Who's
so
General
it's like,
Flynn?
What is
who's
this? General Flynn? General Michael Flynn, he was in the military. And I don't know the case specifics, but I know he had the same judge, Judge Emmett Sullivan in D.C., where the government, after so long, said, we're not charging this man anymore. Like, we're done here. The judge said, nope, I'm not allowing that. We're going to continue this case. Where you're like, why? When the person that is pressing the charges is saying no, you have a judge that's saying yes. To me, I don't care what side of the aisle you sit on. Everybody should be held accountable to somebody. And these judges in D.C. are not only they're appointed for life, they don't have true oversight because Congress is over these judges. Nobody sits in their courtroom. That's why they can say the things that they say. They do the things they want to do. My husband's been in D.C. for almost 2 years, and I know it's not just him being affected and the guys in that pod. Because just last week, they were on the other side of the jail while the jail was being investigated for an issue. And the citizens of D.C. that were being held in there were literally, they said to them, can you please get somebody over here? It's 80 degrees in these pods. We can't hardly breathe. We're held up for 24 to 36 hours in these pods, and the food's terrible. So it's their own residents that they have in this facility that's suffering from this. So it's not just, I do believe this has shed light. I've said forever, I knew that the system was bad because my husband was law enforcement for so long. I didn't know how bad it was. And this, I've been ignorant to it for so long, but these families, especially Black and Brown families, have been going through this for years without anybody saying anything.
Well, that's what I honestly thought when you were talking about the conditions in jail, I thought, oh yeah, well, welcome to what poor people have been dealing with. Like, they don't give a, they don't, I agree with that point.
Yes.
So let's back up though. And this is the part that I think gets tricky. And obviously I would love to talk to your husband directly, but do you know, like, what was his purpose? If I said to you, why were you at the Capitol that day? What was your plan, idea? Like, what was, why was he there in the first place?
So one, he truly was steadfast in his beliefs. And I think everybody, regardless if it was Biden on the other side or whoever it is, I believe you have your First Amendment right as an American to protest. If you believed it was stolen, then you have the right to protest. I don't care if it's in D.C., Nashville, Atlanta, wherever it might be. Those are our rights as Americans. But his friend talked him into going. So who is now, who we believe to now be an FBI informant or some type of confidential human source. We don't know if it was prior, but I do know for certain that this man was trying to be a part of the Proud Boys community, trying to fill out an application and be a part of it. And 2 weeks prior to my husband being arrested, he was arrested and interrogated, and then he was released. So I truly believe that the FBI went to him and said, hey, listen, your co-defendant, who was a cop, has a bigger case than you. If you will testify against him in trial, we'll give you immunity. Now, I won't know for certain until we go to trial.
Because you'll be able to ask him those questions and you'll know.
Right. Well, we will be able to. I do believe without a shadow of a doubt, he is going to take the stand against my husband. However, this is the crazy part about this. If you were to go watch video that day, he did, or as you've seen, my husband truly should be exonerated. If you want to charge him with trespassing for being there that day, slap him with a misdemeanor and a fine and we'll move on with our lives. Like, just like across the board, if you want to do that. I don't have a problem with that, because if you shouldn't have been there, you shouldn't have been there. I don't have a problem with that. I do believe there should have been things put in place like, hey, you should go home. They have the system, the speakers to do whatever, and you play it on a little boombox. I do have a problem with that, but that's another battle, another fight. Like, let's get through this and move on with our lives. But you watch what that guy did that day. It's worse than he's sitting there fighting people, and yet you're going to give him immunity to testify against my husband, who truly tried to help a cop who acknowledged that he helped him and then tried to save a woman's life. Yet you're giving somebody else immunity that paid for the entire trip, that talked him into going, and then now this guy gets immunity while my husband's sitting behind bars for 23 months.
You're saying they, in this case, the prosecution, it's a bigger headline because your husband's a policeman. And so that's their reason.
I absolutely. So going back, they my husband was on the FBI wanted list starting in January. So was his
friend.
How do
we know this?
And his, I have pictures of it from January.
Like, can you look it up somewhere?
When he was on, but well, he's off of it now because they apprehended him.
So your husband was on the
most wanted list? He's on there. It just said like, oh, all these people are. The FBI most wanted list.
Oh, after January 6th, they were like, here's our most, but your husband is like, but yeah. I'm saying your husband is like, he's not hidden. He's like, he's a public person. Why would he be in the most? Why couldn't they just come get him?
I don't know. So the guy that went with him, he worked for the government in Knoxville at the nuclear labs. Well, they saw he did an interview on January 6th and it was on YouTube. Well, his workplace found out about it and said to him, hey, you're on this. If you don't turn yourself into the FBI, we have to turn you in. So he got an attorney and he went to the FBI, and the FBI said, we have nothing. I mean, this was 2 months after January 6th. All they had were pictures of these guys on the website. They didn't have anything against them. So they let it go. In May of 2021 on MSNBC, they played a video clip of my husband saying that he was attacking police that day. They literally had it just like, but they didn't notice that Roseanne Boyland was being beaten in the corner. So they had to pull it off live air. After that, somebody identified him and they tailed us for 90 days before they apprehended him in August of 2021.
How do you know they tailed you?
Because first they went to Cherokee County, where this person said that he still worked. He didn't. We had moved back to Tennessee during COVID, but they went to Cherokee County and they in Cherokee County said, no, he's not here anymore. He went to Williamson County. They went to Williamson County, and then that's where they found out like where he lived and all of that. They literally told us in the bond hearing, the prosecution, the FBI took the stand and they said, we found out about him in May. We apprehended him. And so we went to the Middle District of Tennessee first for a bond hearing. And that judge said, So you're telling me from literally the day this man was born to January 5th, 2021, you can't tell me that he broke the law, right? There's nothing. He was an upstanding citizen, a law enforcement officer. He didn't have a strike on his record in law enforcement. He was given a life-saving award in Cherokee County, promoted. And then January 6th happened. Then from January 7th to May, before you knew who he was, again, you can't, he didn't break the law, nothing. And then you knew about him from May until August 16th. You didn't arrest him on a traffic violation or any type, you know, when usually you have a big suspect who's done truly wrong. You take him for rolling through a stop sign or something with something very small. And yet you waited, you had an arrest warrant signed on August 4th and you waited to August 17th to apprehend him. Why? If he is such a danger to the community, I want to know why you let him go on the streets for 90 days. And the prosecution and the FBI couldn't say anything. So this judge in Tennessee said, I believe he's fine on restrictions at home. Whatever restrictions you want to put in place, like, that's fine. He'll be fine pending trial. And then the government wouldn't accept that answer. That wasn't good enough for them. So they appealed it. And then it went in front of the judge in D.C. And that's when the judge was like, absolutely not. I just truly believe that you look at the jury pool, you just look at the statistics across the board, like take your feelings out of it. And you look at the statistics of Washington, D.C. How would anybody ever get a fair trial in D.C. for the fact that in these cases, everybody that was in D.C. on January 6, 2021 was named a victim of this. Anybody. It didn't matter if you were there that day, if you were at home, you were named a victim. So if you went and robbed a bank and you held hostages, do you believe those hostages would be sitting on your jury because they were a victim? No. So if you're named a victim of a case, how are you able, truly able to sit on a jury and not be biased?
I agree with all of that. I do want to back up a little bit, though. When you said his friend talked him into it, the goal was just to have, let's call it peaceful protest. Like, we think this is bullshit and we're going to make noise about it, right? But then people, I guess, where was the line where, like, people, like, clearly got to the gates, right? That's the part where it gets really, and here's the thing. I'm trying to, and again, all of us that watch this on the news, when you're in that audio clip, when you're in that officer's cam, like, it's disturbing. You're like for everybody, you're like, this is just, you're like being in a war, right? This is like, this is why people have PTSD, right? It's like, because they're in that shit.
Right.
So I give the let's call it the cops on the other side a little bit of grace, because you're trying to save your own life and you're trying to save the Capitol. Like, hey, not on my watch. They're not going to cross. And somebody inside of their mask is screaming, please stop hitting me. You don't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, it's chaos.
Yeah, it's chaos. Very much so.
So I give them a little bit of grace, except for the part where, like, okay, well, here's a person down. Now we need to, like, and like your husband's saying, please let me through, because he's just like, otherwise he's going to get squished, right? So again, like, what, like, do you know what his intention was? If I were to ask him, hey, what, like, what were you going to do? Like, what, because the crowd starts moving forward, I guess. Like, that's where the line is going to get tough for any jury if you threw the audio out, because you're like, well, what's he there to do? What's happening? Is he there to cause harm? Is he not?
Right. So I give a lot of those officers grace that day, to be honest with you, because I believe they were set up. I believe that they went in that day not knowing what was going to happen. I do believe that some people knew, maybe higher ups knew, because they had, I don't know if they knew truly what was going to happen that day. I don't know if we will ever know that. But were they prepared for however many people that were in D.C. to be there that day? No, they denied the National Guard. They denied people overtime. They put people in there that it was just true chaos. So I truly feel bad for those officers. I want to speak to those officers, all three of them that encountered my husband that day, and ask them and tell them, as a citizen, I'm sorry if you were set up that day, because I that's wrong in my opinion. These officers are supposed to be trained to protect us. And if they're concerned about their livelihood, their lives, I just truly believe they were set up for failure that day, in my opinion. So I do extend a ton of grace to them. Other than the ones, Lila Morris, I have no grace for you. You should have never done that day. The people that were shooting ammunition into the crowd that knew better than that, I have no grace for you. But the people like is Stephen Sagemont, who the one that thanks him, and Andrew White, the one that fell down the stairs. I do, because I believe they were set up for failure that day. That's just my personal opinion about that. I don't know. I've never been able to ask my husband. You know, I truly believe when all of that was done, you see him come off that adrenaline high. His shoulder was broken. He was in a car accident 9 days prior. He should have never lived in that car accident. So his shoulder was broken before that. And you see him on this adrenaline high. He just picked up a large woman and moved her to try and get help. He's picking up this officer to help him. You see him coming off of this, right? And then he tells him, I think my shoulder's broken. And that is why he wanted to get through for medical. So at the end of that video, the only other he never goes inside. He never gets behind the line of duty. And a civilian comes and gets him, and he goes to a medical tent. That's the entire stint. Those 10 minutes, and that's it. He never does anything else that day. He goes to the medical tent to get attention. He goes to the hotel, and they come home the next day.
Will you get a chance to talk to those? Will that police officer testify, like, he saved my life?
Yeah, so we hope so. But again, with these trials, it just depends on what the evidence they will allow in. I do know some people have requested people to be subpoenaed and to be witnesses in the trial, and the government says no. To me, knowing our court system, and I get that it's broken, I understand that, but you should be able to provide a defense to if you're innocent. Like, we are supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, technically, in the court of law, but it's not. You're guilty until you're proven innocent. Unfortunately, that's the way this system is. But they have, in these court hearings, they have four officers that will come in and testify on the government's behalf, the prosecution's behalf, but they don't have to have anything to do with you that day. It's Officer Fanone, Officer Dunn, Officer Gunnell, and one other. I call them the celebrity officers from that day. You see them on the January 6th hearings. They're the ones writing the books, all of those things. They will come in. You don't have to have anything to do with them, but they will come in and testify about what happened that day. In my husband's case, he didn't encounter any single one of those people. The people that need to come in and testify are any single one of those men that were on that line, men or women that were on the line that day.
Can you reach out to them, like, personally? Can you, like, try to contact them, especially the one that thanks your husband?
I can't, because I would put the case in jeopardy by reaching out to them.
But your lawyer, right?
And so we do plan on doing that leading up to trial. But again, if they're not allowed to testify and they've been put under a gag order to not talk, then they can't talk. Some of them, I will tell you that, some of them are not even there anymore because of what happened that day. And they can't come out and talk about it. I've personally had conversations with Metro PD when I have been in DC off the record about what happened that day. And it aligns with what we think. With they knew that there were people on the ground that were there to cause problems. And so they were prepared for that. But it was just so chaotic that they didn't even know what to do. They weren't even trained for a situation of this matter.
Well, I try not to be a conspiracy theorist. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when, like, conspiracy theories were only the wackos, right?
Like
a great movie like JFK, and, like, you're like, oh, wow. And, you know, now conspiracy theory means something very different. But if they don't, if they don't let the guy who says thank you testify, well, then you're just fucked. Then, like, clearly the deck is stacked.
I mean,
that's just the most basic line of what makes a good witness. Well, someone that's privy to the facts. Well, here's the guy who's actually being helped. Even if they want to, like you said, charge him with someone else, or your husband did do something else where he beat somebody, which he didn't.
Right.
Like, the fact that you do have someone on video and audio saying, like, thanks, brother, then you know you're just kind of, the deck is stacked and you're kind of screwed. When he was apprehended, did they come, like, full boat, like, knocking down the door and all that? I'm not sure if you've told that before.
So actually, they took him at work. They didn't take him at our house. I wasn't even home. I was on the West Coast for work. And I tried to get a hold of my husband that morning because there was a 2-hour difference. So I got up and I went to the gym and I was trying to get a hold of him, knowing he would be going into work, and he didn't answer. So I was like, okay, I'll call him later. No problem. I didn't hear from him all morning. And I was going downstairs in the hotel lobby and I got this random phone number that was calling. And I usually don't answer those. If they leave a voicemail, you know, I usually call them back. But I didn't answer it because I didn't know. Well, they didn't leave a voicemail and they called back immediately. And it was a Florida number. So I picked up the phone and they were like, is this Miss McAbee? And I was like, it is. And they said, this is David with the FBI. We just apprehended your husband and we are about to walk into your house. Is there anybody there? I said, no, nobody's home, but I do have two animals. Cause I've already heard the horror stories of them shooting people's dogs and like just terrible, terrible things. I said, no, nobody is home. I have two dogs. They are in their crates. I said, but one of them is special needs. So
you're telling this story now very calmly. Are you like shitting your pants at this point? Like, holy shit, this must be about January 6th.
Oh, it was literally, I knew what it was about when they came. But not that I didn't know that they were coming for him by any means. I never expected that. But when they called, I knew what it was about. I mean, there was no way I couldn't know, you know, but it was almost like an outer body experience. It's like, I'm talking to them on the phone, but I am like in this whole other world. Like, you know, it's almost like in those movies where you like hear like two voices and you're like, what is going on here? You know? And so I was kind of just in flight or fight mode at that point. And so I told them everything, you know, and I turned on my cameras and I had cameras in my house. And so I turned them on. So I have an hour and a half of them raiding my house. I mean, they literally came in guns blazing. They took a gun to my pantry, like they were opening it and they were holding their gun. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like a box of Cheerios is going to jump out at you or something. Like I told you, like, I get that they have to be protected. I get that. But I'm like, I literally just told you on the phone that nobody is in there. Like you just took him at work. You know, it's just him and I, because you've surveilled us for 90 days. Like it's just crazy. And then they found the cameras and they hid them, of course. But I did get an hour and a half of them raiding our house. They took 14 items, including our front porch flag. They took our flag off, our American flag off of our front porch as one of the items they see.
Because.
Wow. I don't know.
Can you say what the other items were? Was it weapons or?
Yeah. No. It was just what he wore that day, like his shirt, his sweatshirt. They took they of course took his work computer, his personal computer, his cell phone. I can't remember all the items, but just basically what he wore that day. That's what they took as evidence.
Well, I guess that does make me ask the question about like what he was doing that day is like, and the thing that I think kind of jumps out when you watch the video with no audio is the gloves, right? And it's like, oh, well, you're probably not going to wear those unless you maybe want to fuck someone up. Someone might think. So can we talk about that?
Yeah. No. No, absolutely. Because his friend had been to, there were two rallies in DC before this. There was a rally in November and a rally in December that his friend had already gone to. And his friend told him, hey, listen, there's usually Antifa there. There's people there that would have caused problems. I personally have not run into any. I've seen them out at night, but I haven't seen any. And so what do you think when you're a police officer and you're going into a crowd of, I truly don't know how many people were there, 200,000, a million. I don't know. I've never like looked that up. To me, I don't care if there were two people there that day. To me, that's like, doesn't matter. But so what do? You go and you want to protect yourself at all costs, right? And so I know without a shadow of a doubt, if he knew what was going to happen that day, he would not have gone. That's not the type of person he is. He would not have subjected himself to that. But now I do know without a shadow of a doubt, knowing what he has gone through for the last 23 months, whatever the future looks like for him, for what he did that day, he would have done it all over again, knowing the consequences, because that's who he is. I mean, he received a life-saving award in Cherokee County. Like, that's just who he is as a person. You see him jump into action. I mean, you literally have people who are supposed to be on your side. When they fall down the stairs together, they're calling him a traitor for protecting this officer. And then when he gets back up to the line of duty after they move Roseanne away, they yell at him, you're one of us. Why are you helping them? He was hated by the people that were around him that day because he stepped into action to help the officer. Because I have heard, I haven't watched a lot of video prior to that. I've of course have seen the evidence that they've used against him, but I have heard that the people right around the tunnel were so mad at this officer because he was kicking Roseanne as she was laying on the ground. That's how this whole thing started, was they had tear gas the entire tunnel. So it's like the air just was sucked up and people literally couldn't breathe. So they were being pushed out of there and people were just piling on top of each other. And Roseanne happened to be on the bottom of the pile. Could she have suffocated while she was down there? I do believe she was still alive at some point. But I don't believe she died until after they took her away. I do believe she was unconscious. I hope she was unconscious for the beating. But that officer was right around Lila Morris and had kicked her while she was down. And that's why they were so mad at this officer, AW, who was laying on the ground. But again, my husband didn't see that. He saw an officer in need and literally jumped the line to go help him as Roseanne's being beaten off to the left of him.
What is your husband charged with?
He has four felonies and three misdemeanors. Every time he went to pick up the officer, they charged him with assault with a deadly weapon. So that's the biggest charge that he has. Now, they have acknowledged he did not hurt anybody that day. The government has come out and said that because they tried to say that he was the one that pulled AW down the stairs. How can you pull somebody down the stairs when your foot is literally in between their legs? That doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess you don't have to have common sense. But when the other officer, so he's trying to help AW, when the other officer, CM, comes up to him and he pops back up and he puts his fist and he says, "I'm helping, I'm one of you." And then they fall down the stairs together. So he never even assaults the officer that assaulted him, but they charged him with assault.
So it's assault. And then what are the other charges? Is there like a charge against the government? Like, is there like a sedition or something?
No, he doesn't have seditious conspiracy. He doesn't have the 1512 charge, which is the obstruction of official proceeding. I do believe I have seen this in several cases before, that as you're leading up to trial, if you don't take a plea deal, they will supersede you and charge you with the 1512 charge. So I believe that's probably coming down the line for him, which is another felony charge.
Throw everything at you and then know that you're going to try to talk it down or cop a plea or whatever. So I'm surprised they haven't already thrown.
Oh, I don't know what it is about him. Headline, it's a law enforcement officer. It gets a lot of attention, right? They won't even negotiate a plea deal with him. They have offered him a plea deal of 10 years. And his attorneys have tried to go back and negotiate it with them. I mean, some of these people on his case are pleading to assault with a deadly weapon. And they're getting 78 to 110 or something like that. And his attorneys have tried to go and negotiate a plea deal and they will not negotiate with him.
It's interesting that they've decided to go so again, especially when there's all this evidence. Is it one of those things where it's the United States versus him and a bunch of others, or is he has his own like case?
No, he's one of nine.
Okay. So, but they can.
So usually when they charge a group of.
No, that's what I was asking, is like how that even works.
So usually when they charge a group of people, like they charge the Oath Keepers, like they charge the Proud Boys, you have to know each other. Nobody, and none of these nine people knew each other. And it doesn't make sense how they pick and choose who they, there was more than nine people in the West Terrace Tunnel that have been charged as well. So how did they pick and choose this group of nine people? I don't know. My husband didn't know any of them until he sat with a couple of them in jail. And then then you could say that they knew each other. But prior to that, he didn't know any of them.
So what is the current, like, what's the status right now? Like, what's the next step?
The ones that haven't plead out will go to trial. We will start jury selection on September 5th.
September 5th.
25th, 2 months from now.
So you have to go to D.C. to, like, every time stuff happens.
Yes.
But that's the actual, there's no more, like, preliminary whatever. There's no more, like.
It could change. He's had three different courts. This is his third trial date. So it could change.
Do you still have a full-time job outside of this, or has this become your full-time job?
Yes. No. I have a full-time job outside. I work two jobs.
And are they understanding?
They are. I mean, I do have to be very careful because I don't want to put my companies in any type of position just because it is so political one way or the other. So like I'm not listed on any websites or anything like that because I don't want to put those companies for them to hire me. Like I already had one of the jobs when this happened. I just got a part-time job because it's very financially burdening to have somebody and sit them in the crosshairs if somebody Googled my name and figured it out. You know what I mean? That's just, they never signed up for this. The companies never signed up for this. So I would never want to put them in the crosshairs.
But they're sympathetic to your deal and like know that like you have to travel a lot. And
yeah. Yes.
Because I can imagine. Yeah. Because it's not just. Yeah. So do you have like the attorneys that you picked? Like are they defending a lot of people? Are they only taking this case on? Like, are they taking on a lot of January 6th people? Like, how is that going?
So we started with a public defender and we hired private counsel because that's what we were told to do. You know, you have a better chance, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, we were 2 years into this and I'm like, we're getting nowhere with our private counsel. Nowhere. They like motions are getting denied. Like they would hardly go and visit him, you know, and I was like, and they did, they had a lot of January 6th cases. And so they just weren't able to give him the attention he needed. So I got a hold of this attorney and I reached out to him, was talking to him, a very well-known attorney in the DC area. And he literally said, Sarah, how much have you spent so far? And I told him, and he said, you know, you're going to spend even more when you go to trial. And I said, yes, I'm prepared for that. And he said, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to lose. You're going to a jury trial in DC. He said, if he doesn't get found on one or two charges as guilty, like take that as a win. But he's going to be found guilty because it's a 97% conviction rate right now. In the process, when they are choosing a jury selection, when they go in there, the jurors are literally jumping for joy to be on a jury. And afterwards, when you talk to them, they basically say, we just wanted to stick it to them. We wanted to be able to tell our friends and families that we found somebody guilty of January 6th. That's what they're dealing with. And they won't give them a change of venue. So he said, you know, just be prepared to be found that he's going to be found guilty. He said the real fight is on at sentencing and for the appeals process. So he said, get rid of your private attorneys, go back to having a public defender. You'll get a decent public defender. He said, what our perception of a public defender is basically on a state level where they're overrun with cases. They don't care. They just want to get them out. That's a state level. Now, when you go to federal, it's different. There are not a ton of federal cases. Now with January 6th, now that they've broken the system, that's a little bit different, but federal, public defenders are very good attorneys. And so I like our public defender that we have. So we will have a public defender through this process, and then we will hire private counsel for the appeals process.
Well, I think that's a very healthy, I have a friend who's, without getting into it, is facing jail time and he's terrified. And I can't imagine, but in some ways, like, is there a chance? And again, I know it's horrible to even think about, but the fact that you've accepted this, at least if he does get found guilty, right, and you know the real work's to begin, do you think they might actually, like, let him be at jail near you, and then you might actually see him more? Like, if you ask to be sent to a Tennessee federal prison, or...
So, when you're in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, you technically have to be in somewhere within 500 driving miles of your home. That's what one of their rules are.
Isn't that ridiculous? 500's not short. 500's a 10-hour drive.
No. Yeah, and they don't follow those rules. They literally have somebody who is from Mississippi that is being held in Pennsylvania right now. And then they have somebody from Pennsylvania that's being held in Texas. Like, it's just like they just, and when I tell you this system is broken from A to Z, there's so many aspects of it where you're like, how does this make any sense?
Have you thought about making this your full-time job?
So I just launched a foundation actually on July 1st. I launched a foundation called Stand in the Gap. And what our goal is reentry, family services, and justice reform. So with those things, it's not only going to help January 6th defendants, because my heart goes out to those people that are truly, if you did bad things that day, you need to be charged accordingly and you need to do your time. I know there were bad people there that day. I watched stuff happen on TV just like everybody else did. I was at home that day. But I truly believe that these people have been overcharged. They haven't been given their true fair day in court. And that's the crazy thing. If you were to talk to these 100, there's 158 individuals that are currently locked up for January 6th. If you were to talk to them, I have never once heard them ask for a pardon. I've heard them ask to be to have a deposition with anybody in Congress or anybody that holds power, to ask them what happened that day and what has happened to them from that day forward. But they have never asked for a pardon. They just want their day in court. I truly believe that if my husband's case was able to move back to the Middle District of Tennessee, according to our Constitution, you're allowed to have a jury of your peers. Those are his peers. If he was allowed to be moved back to the Middle District of Tennessee, I truly believe all these assault charges would be out the window. These misdemeanor charges, trespassing, whatever, to be honest with you, I don't even really care about those. The big charges, I don't want my husband to be a felon. I mean, our whole life has been changed because he's not even going to be able to go back into law enforcement for doing the things that he was trained to do that day as a citizen. But through that foundation, our goal, while our focus is January 6th right now, our goal is to build this to where we are looking at helping defendants across the board. Because I know for the Tennessee State Prison System, when you are released, you get $75 a bus ticket and whatever clothes they have in their closet. Sometimes if they don't have anything that fits you, they send you out in your jumper, and then they send you a $20 bill that you have to pay because you took their jumper. But how could you, it's so crazy. How could you ever get your life back on track if you don't have family that's willing to help you, or an organization, or anything of that sort? That's why our system is so broken, because you look at it across the board. And unfortunately, most of the people that are incarcerated is the poor and the uneducated. Well, we shouldn't take advantage of those people. Those people need help just like any of these other people. So we need true, you know, through reform in the prisons, in the justice system as a whole. And we need to, the justice system, the prison system is supposed to be a rehabilitation program. It is not. It's an adult daycare, to be honest with you. They need to go in and they need to have jobs that they can figure out, that they truly do have skill sets in life that they are able to use. Because to me, prison reform is a very democratic thing. It's not super Republican. So that's what I wanted to do with this organization, is to be able to talk to both sides of the aisle and say, listen, you have people on your side being persecuted just as we do on our side. At the end of the day, we're all Americans and we should be following our Constitution. Every person as an American has the right to change their life. And I believe in second chances. And so that's what we're asking the general public to do, is to help us build this organization. Because I believe if they're going to come after somebody like my husband, they're going to go after anybody that they want to on either side. I don't believe that this is just solely a conservative thing. I think that, you know, you look at it, and across the world, they still have Canadian truckers locked up. They still have people in Brazil locked up for their what they call J8. It's not just happening in America.
Yeah, this has been quite an eye-opening experience for me. And, you know, I watched that video again. I'd seen it the night that I was just like cruising YouTube when I saw that first. Because again, like, I don't watch a lot of, you know, quote unquote right-wing content. So it's usually not being fed to me. So I don't even know why I saw yours the first time. But it really was eye-opening to me. And again, like I live in Atlanta. Black people get screwed always, all the time. So like, it isn't news to me that this stuff happens. And I think it's frustrating and painful when, like, here's hard evidence that could be seen, and that is, it completely changes the narrative. Because you can still find, if you Google your husband's name, what you mostly see is the videos without the audio. Here's this guy. And again, it's just this chaotic sort of scene happening. I was going to ask, you said you have a foundation, but you also have like a legal fund. Like, how can people sort of help that want to help?
Yeah. So we have our own personal givesendgo.com/Maccabee. And that goes to his commissary, to the legal fund, any type of like personal expense we've had to endure throughout, like we're planning to pay for the appeals and that sort of thing in that aspect. And then, yes, the foundation, because I head up the foundation, unfortunately, I believe in conflict of interest, and I would never want to, you know, in the general public. And while I will fight for him on his behalf, I have done all of this personally. But I want to make, like, this is bigger than just him and I. It's about America as a whole, because I don't believe this is just happening. Just like you said, people are screwed over left and right all the time. All the time. It doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter where you sit politically. It doesn't matter who you are. That's why I believe true change needs to happen across the board.
Is there a thought that if Trump gets elected again, he would pardon your husband and everybody on January 6th? Because people are saying it's his fault anyway.
I don't know about everybody, because I do, as I've said before, I do believe that bad things happen that day. I believe that some of these people haven't even been charged yet. I do know that he has said that he would. And I know, like, Ron DeSantis has said he would look at it on a case by case basis. Because, and the thing that I struggle with is, you have a lot of people that are like, well, these nonviolent people, they shouldn't be in jail, and the nonviolent people shouldn't be charged. My husband is charged with violence that day. And as you've said, he didn't commit violence that day. He didn't do what they said he did. But you look at it on paper, and he's charged with violent charges. So I think it needs to be looked at as a whole across the board of the 158 people that have been locked up, and then the 1,200 that have been affected by this. And then they do need, I think there needs to be accountability on January 6th. The people that caused problems, I don't care what side you're on. I don't care if you're Antifa. I don't care if you're a confidential human source and you were on the ground. If you caused violence that day, you need to be held accountable. The police officers, like Lila Morris, she needs to turn her badge in. Michael Byrd, turn your badge in. Why did you kill people that day, unarmed American citizens, when you have a use of force continuum that you are trained on and you just go, you're beating somebody, an unconscious woman laying on the ground who's not armed? That turn your badge in. You should not. You don't represent me, and I'm sure you don't represent a lot of these people in America. It's just crazy.
So you're saying that's not something you're like hanging a lot of hope on, that the pardon thing will sort of save the day?
No, because honestly, I can't put my hope into a man unknown of what's going to happen. These people make promises all the time, and you know, politicians make empty promises constantly. I've spoken to over 24 people in Congress on both sides of the aisle, and they have done nothing to help these guys. Nothing. They held a field hearing, and I was able to testify in front of them over a month ago. Have they done anything? No. I do believe that they do this stuff just to appease us, because I think these people are going to be used during the election season. But that's why I started the foundation, because I want to look downrange. One of the things we're doing through the foundation is appellant lawyers, because unfortunately, a lot of these families have put all their money. I mean, I know a family that personally spent over $150,000 in their defense. He got found guilty on all the charges because he went to trial, got served a 10-year sentence. Now they have nothing. They sold their home. They put their family's life savings into this defense attorney that wasn't able to come up with anything. And now they don't have any money for the appellant lawyers. So I'm looking downrange with this, because I can't put my faith into something that might happen.
Are you saying you are going to go to trial no matter what? Or if the deal gets low enough, you'll take it just to get it over with and move on to start the appeal process?
They won't negotiate a deal with
us. At all?
No.
Well, again, it's like, he's not even the only law enforcement officer. It seems so odd that they would target you, right? He's not the only law enforcement officer being charged, right?
No, he's the only law enforcement officer being charged in regards where he was at with Roseanne Boyland. I do believe that has almost everything to do with it, because they have truly tried to sweep her death under the rug and what has happened to her.
Because they don't want to own up to it.
I don't think, well, one, they cremated her body immediately. And so her family can't even go and get her body exhumed and see what happened. They cremated her. They came out, you know, immediately said, oh, it was a drug overdose. And it's like, if you would like really think about it, you're like, she was sober for 7 years. She was fine 10 minutes before when she was walking into the tunnel, when you can see that video. And why, out of all places, would you overdose at a Trump rally?
That doesn't make any sense. I didn't know this. Roseanne Boyland.
Oh, yeah. They came back on her coroner's report and said that she overdosed.
On what?
I don't know. I think she was on like Adderall or something like that. I can't remember.
I'm sober a long time. People do go back out.
Oh, they relapse.
People relapse.
Yeah.
But I'm so confused. And she's from Kennesaw. She's from Georgia. So that's interesting.
She is from Kennesaw. Her family lives there. Yeah.
So what are they doing? What is the family doing?
I don't know. A lot of this stuff is kept quiet, even with like Ashley Babbitt and her family, just because they're keeping it under wraps, because there are a lot of lawsuits that are involved. But like I've said about Roseanne, you watched the video. She was clearly already blue when she was laying on the ground. So I do believe she was unconscious. But for a police officer to beat her 3 or 4 times with a stick, that you're unconscious and laying on the ground, how does that make any sense to do that?
I'm going to have to read this later. I mean, she says they met her at Triangle Club. I know that place. I've been there. I mean, honestly, I don't watch like a ton of news, because a lot of it's just negative and noise. And my wife kind of keeps me like, if something's worth like whatever, I'm like, we'll talk about it.
Right.
But I do a lot of YouTube perusing at night. And so, are your lawyers allowed to talk to her family? Is that like,
I've talked to her family. My husband wrote a letter to her family, and we knew somebody that passed it along to them. And so I've talked to them before. But again, they've even said that they don't understand why there's so many people that are being held. If you were to go look at the guys that are held in DC specifically, and now some of them have taken plea deals, so now they're serving their time or they have gone to trial. But there were over a dozen guys sitting in DC for the longest time that were around her when she passed. And her family cannot figure out why these people are being charged when they were trying to help her.
All right. So what's the, give me the website one more time and then I'll let you go.
Yeah. The foundation website is standinthegap.foundation. It's a 501c3. And it goes into all of our different initiatives on there. And then my husband's personal legal fund is giftsandgo.com/Maccabee.
And there you have it. I'm glad we had that call. Sarah, thank you so much. The last I heard, the trial will actually be starting beginning of October, it looks like. So we'll have an update for you on that as it goes along. But thank you again, Sarah. And again, there'll be links below that have the audio to what happened that day on the Capitol. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Love you. Miss you. Mean it. I've got to run.